If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
And welcome, everybody, to another episode of Pulse of Fins Nation. I am your host, Lewis Song, and I am joined by a slew of panelists today. I've got Ron Caniff. I've got Chris Early, otherwise known as Duke. I've got Eric Wideke. I also have Coach Eric Smith. And later on, we will be joined by Hussam Patel. So we have got just a whole bunch. Oh, speaking of which, who here is Hussam Patel? So if I add him, does he accidentally remove himself? Yes, that's exactly what happened. So... That's what happens when too many people have producer power. So we've got a whole bunch of people here. We're going to be talking about the Miami Dolphins' initial 53-man roster. And I say initial very strongly because we know that what's going to happen now is that we're going to go through the whole list of players. We'll talk about who made it for now, who is probably going to get cut later to make room for other people, who are some people on the waiver wire that the Miami Dolphins should be potentially looking at. I'm sure that every single suggestion is going to be based on the offensive line. Jason Stamps, Fins Up. Yes, sir. Thank you very much for joining us. We always appreciate hearing the pulse of Fins Nation. That's why the show is what it is. So we're going to go ahead and get ready to talk. But before that, we have to mention our sponsor for this show, jerseys305.com. I'll play the video for you guys and just enjoy.
Hey, it's Ethan Skolnick for the 5 Reasons Sports Network. We've got a great new sponsor that fits with us perfectly. It's called jerseys305.com. That's jerseys305.com. This is your home for dead stock and vintage jerseys from the Heat, Panthers, Dolphins, Marlins, and the other local teams. Their mission was born from a passion for wearing jerseys of the old styles and the past players. Jerseys 305 aims to make every fan stand out from the crowd with unique pieces that you don't commonly see anymore. Maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, but not today. And Jerseys 305 was created by the fans, for the fans. They're diehards just like you. In fact, they're probably listening to this episode right now. So check them out. Jerseys 305, their partnership with 5 Reasons Sports, celebrating with a 10% discount on the next purchase using the code 5 at checkout. Unlock your exclusive savings on the entire vintage collection.
And again, that's jerseys305.com. Use that promo code 5 to get 10% off your next order on that website. All right. So thankfully, I have a good friend of mine, Mr. Ron Caniff, who made it his mission to go ahead and pull up a very handy dandy graphic. I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to pull it up here.
I'm going to pull it up here.
Okay. So basically, it's just a very easy way to pull up what the current roster looks like. So I have it here for everybody to check out. I hope everybody can see it here. It's trying. All right. So it looks really small on our end, but as you can see on the defensive line here, Calais Campbell, Deshaun Hand, Benito Jones, Brandon Peely, Zach Sealer. That is your defensive line group. Linebacker is a very, very long list. Quinton Bell made the team. Jordan Brooks, Mo Kamara, David Long Jr., Emmanuel Ogba, Jalen Phillips. Duke Riley made it again. Chop Robinson, Channing Tindall made the team. And, of course, Anthony Walker Jr. Now, at corner, and this is where things start to get interesting in the secondary, Ethan Bonner made the team. Storm Duck made the team. Kendall Fuller, I'm having to zoom in here a little bit. Kendall Fuller made it, of course. Kader Kohu, Saran Neal, that's who that is. I'm trying to read with them. I need
special teams ace. That's why he's there.
I need a magnifying glass. Jalen Ramsey is on the team. Now, safeties, and this is where we'll get into the surprise cuts here. Safety consists of Elijah Campbell, Javon Holland, Marcus May, Patrick McMorris officially made the team, and of course, Jordan Poyer. Special teamers, there are two, not three, Jake Bailey and Jason Sanders. So there's a name missing on that list. We'll go ahead and we'll get into that in just a second. I'm going to go ahead and pull up now the offensive list.
You want me to read it, Lewis? Because I have it blown up where I could see it better if you want me to read it.
If you could. Yeah. I'm just trying desperately to actually see what I'm looking at here.
So QBs, Tua, obviously, and Skyler. So we're going to see where that goes if they add a third, try and add a third to the practice squad. And if that third is still Mike White or somebody else. Running backs, got five there, but including Ingold, we got Achane, Ingold, Mostert, Wilson, and Wright. I think that's probably it at running back. I think they'll try and add somebody to the practice squad, but they cut Chris Brooks, obviously, injured wave. Wide receiver, only four right now because of the injury situation. You've got Berrios, Tyreek Hill, Jaylen Waddle, Malik Washington. There's an interesting name not on there, Eazy-E, right? So tight end Tanner Connor, Teflon Khan, I'm going to start calling him. Julian Hill, Jonnu Smith, Durham Smythe, and OL. We have Armstead, Brewer, Cotton, another guy that keeps hanging on. Driscoll, Eichenberg, Austin Jackson, Robert Jones, Kendall Lamb, Andrew Meyer, and Patrick Paul.
So you got yourself a long list there, but again, very, very strange lists here. My biggest thing for me, obviously, and I was making a point about this last week with the Nick Needham situation, I really thought that he was going to stick. I thought that favoritism would win out. I knew, and I still know, that Nick Needham is a favorite of the team. Hussam is very heavily suggesting that it's money-based, but Nick Needham was making pennies on the dollar anyway, yeah, so I can't imagine that it was money-based with him.
I'm really interested in hearing, especially Eric Smith and Hussam, because I haven't heard their opinions on this. All of the rest of us talked about it. I just want to say one thing I said last week, Lewis. This team, Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel, have gotten to the success of building the roster and doing what they're doing through a certain process. And part of that process is, and this isn't uncommon in the NFL, right? If you feel like the young guy who you're not, if you don't know how good he could be, is close enough to the guy that you pretty much know where their max is, you're going with the young guy. And that's what happened. That's what I said last week, even though Needham had all that experience. I said, don't be surprised if they keep some of these other guys and move on from Needham. Now, Needham could still get back on this team through the practice squad. We don't know if he'll be claimed, but I just think they have a certain process with that at the bottom of this roster, and that's what they like to do where they can, and it makes sense for the room because they have a lot of safeties. So I don't know that they're going to end up with all those safeties when it's all said and done.
But Patrick McMorris, like him, I understand Elijah Campbell. I do. I get it with him. If you're looking at corner, I get Storm Duck. He made a lot of plays. But McMorris had one really good game where he had a lot of tackles, and then he kind of disappeared the rest of the time. He easily, and I mean easily, could have made it onto Miami's practice squad.
He could still be, too. He could be. I mean, this roster clearly isn't the final 53. You have some really interesting. I mean, they only have four wide receivers. You know, they're adding somebody there. They have more safeties than I think they're going to keep going into the season. Maybe more cornerbacks than they're going to keep. Like, I don't know. I just think we have to kind of wait and see. The questions probably won't be answered until after waiver claims happen, et cetera.
And so you won't get your answer to that question, Ron, probably by until I'd say maybe week 7, week 8, once you see the iteration of this defense that Anthony Weaver wants to run. I mean, Eric and I talked about it earlier on one of our very first podcasts, you know, doing a deep dive of this defense. Like, it takes a certain athletic skill set and intelligence to really run this type of defense. We know Patrick McMorris came from California as well. I believe he's what, 6'1", 6'2", and he was a transfer as well. This entire defense is based upon excellent communication, knowing the route concepts, knowing the coverage which you're running and what route concepts may be coming at you. And it's not more so of being in the right spot. It's about knowing what's coming ahead of time. And pretty much when you watch the film, Lewis and Ron and Chris and Eric as well, obviously the thing that's going to stand out is the stat stuff. Like, he had, what, 8 or 9 tackles? He was the leading tackler in the first preseason game. Then you really didn't see him make a lot of tackles besides that. It's more so when you watch the All-22 on the back end, you can see him communicating with a guy like Marcus Mayer or Elijah Campbell, putting them into spots that can make them successful. Like, for example, Elijah Campbell was making fantastic plays along the middle of the field and the deep end as well, where, you know, there wasn't a lot being thrown at them. And that's more so the communication that McMorris, Campbell, and the defensive backs have. Like, the safeties are going to be the leaders of the defensive back group. You need a guy who is a leader like McMorris was at California. And specifically about roster building, you need guys who can fit the culture, are great communicators, and are leaders as well. With Nick Needham, I do think it was with money. Like, they like him, but if you're going with a younger guy who, you know, is cheaper, you have more room. McMorris is basically a ball of clay, which, you know, Anthony Weaver can work to make something out of. And we know right after the draft, Mike McDaniel, Chris Greer, and along with several other scouts, they have said, you know, we were banging the table for Patrick McMorris in the round before. He was there for us as well. Let's go get our guy. Like, this is our guy right now.
I just don't buy the money part, man. Like, he was making less than $2 million. Like, what money?
There's also something to be said. I don't know what the rookie scale contract is for a 6th round pick, but there's something to be said about having a guy for multiple years on that cheap deal versus a Nick Needham, who I believe
is a smidge more expensive.
But it's on a year-to-year basis, whereas McMorris, you know, okay, we're going to have this player in for a few years. We're going to be able to kind of mold him in the way that we want. And eventually, you know, we could have a guy that I don't know. I don't want to put a ceiling on McMorris because the team seems excited about him. You know, I don't know if they see him as a long-term starter potentially next to Javon Holland. I think that might be getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. But, you know, molding him to where he's at least a playable rotation piece in that safety room. I mean, let's be really honest about the whole Nick Needham thing. He was behind Hoyer. He was behind Holland. He was behind May. He might have even been behind Elijah Campbell at the safety spot. And so when you just put it that way, you take the guy that you can get something more out of down the line, because neither guy, Nick Needham nor Patrick McMorris, in an ideal season, obviously injuries happen, neither of those guys play more than 10, 15% of the snaps in an idealized season on defense. So I think you go with the guy that you can, you know, potentially get more out of in the long term.
Yeah. And if we're talking about money wise, Patrick McMorris's contract, his average annual salary is $1,049,000. Nick Needham's 1 year contract is $1.29 million, with $100K signing bonus and $500,000 guaranteed. Patrick McMorris has less than $180,000 guaranteed. And, you know, after this last CBA, with the Tua contract, the Jalen Waddle contract, and Tyreek Hill contract, it's about guaranteed money as well, rather than average annual salary. So they're saving it there. And as Eric said, you know, Nick Needham specifically would not have played more than 10 or 15% snap share, barring any injuries. And mind you, I'm a huge Nick Needham fan. It's kind of sad to see him go. I mean, we saw his growth and his rise and then his Achilles tear back in 2022 just didn't leave a lot of room for him to actually make waves this preseason as well. It's a really talented defensive back room that the Dolphins have. I mean, do you really expect Nick Needham to take over Kendall Fuller's spot as CB2? Do you expect him to take Kader Kohu's spot as a nickelback as well? Maybe yeah. In some sub packages. No. You do?
If one of those guys gets hurt, yeah, I trust Nick Needham.
Yeah. I mean, but are you going to keep him on the practice squad with the amount of money that he's making where you can call up a guy like Patrick McMorris or get another free agent off the street or your rookie like Storm Duck? Or you could call back or up Bonner. Isaiah Johnson as well.
Or Bonner.
Or even Ethan Bonner.
Yeah. They're just going to go. It's too close. They're just going to go with the young guys that could maybe be that dude. Could maybe even be the next Kader Kohu. And McMorris, he could be the next, he's the next Elijah Campbell. Where you say, well, Elijah Campbell's not that great. But look where they've gotten him from a couple years ago. Just some dude, a name you'd never heard of, practice squad type guy. Now look, contributing on special teams, making plays, right, during the game at his position. So Patrick McMorris is pretty much maybe Campbell. That's like probably what you expect. Or maybe he's even more like what Kohu has done, even though I think Kohu maybe took a step back last year compared to the year before. Still, you know, that's what they're thinking. And Needham just wasn't that much better that it was worth keeping. You want to see what these young guys can do because you have solid starters at the position. You have three solid cornerbacks and three solid safeties. You really do. We have one of the best defensive backfields in the league, I think. I'm curious to hear what Duke and other Eric might have to add there.
Yeah, so I think that a lot of the points have already been made. In my opinion, I don't think that the money was a huge factor in it. I think it was more of a case of this is what happens when you have a talented roster, right? You start to lose guys that you'd like to keep. You have to start building for the future. If they kept Nick Needham over Patrick McMorris, then I don't think that you have a safety on the roster that has less than 4 years of experience. And when you talk about the average lifespan of a NFL player, that's a very veteran group. So when you talk about when would Needham have gotten on the field, you know, he played more as a safety during the preseason, and it's already been brought up, right? Holland, Poyer, May, probably Campbell are all going to be guys that are seeing the field before Nick Needham would. So are you going to stash a guy as your fifth safety who has to go through all those other players before he gets snaps? Or do you keep a Patrick McMorris who hopefully you can develop and he turns into a replacement for a Marcus May or a Jordan Poyer in a year or two? And I think the team clearly felt that Needham and McMorris were close enough that they decided to go with the younger guy, hoping that it pays off by, you know, future roster building.
Yeah, I said last week that if Nick Needham was lower than your fourth corner, then you needed to try to trade him. Trading a player on cut down day is kind of tough because everybody knows guys are going to be cut. And they just pick somebody up without giving up a pick. But he was at best your fifth corner and at best your fifth safety. So he's at best your eighth defensive back. And that guy's getting 200 snaps total. So, if you're going to have a guy on your roster that's getting 200 snaps total, that'd be one of those young guys. Let Nick Needham go somewhere else. I think he's exempt from waivers because he is a vested player. So he can go sign with whoever he wants to. There are enough teams with – we're talking about our fifth cornerback here, and there are teams right now that maybe don't even have a second cornerback they're happy with. So he can go somewhere else and start. So, like Hassam said, I was a fan of his, and I'd love to keep him around, but he's going to go somewhere where he can get playing time, and good for him.
Right, Lewis, so they have initially, just again, initially, we're using the word initially here, four wide receivers on the squad right now, but OBJ is on PUP. River Craycraft is on IR. Taj Washington is on IR. They released Eric Ezukama. And Braylon Sanders is also injured. They tried everything and anything throughout the draft and free agency to have a healthy wide receiver core. What is next for this wide receiver group? Like, what? Who else can they bring in? Like, if these are your four guys for the first 3-4 weeks, and God forbid something happens to Tyreek Hill or Jaylen Waddle, what is this offense going to look like?
You're asking me?
I'm asking you, Lewis.
Yeah, asking you, Lewis.
All right. I mean, I'll tell you, they're going to rely a lot on Eric Pensky. I don't know. How should I define him? Eric W. Eric with a W in his name.
Like his, that's the most reasonable way to go about it, by the way.
Yeah, instead of all that other stuff. Eric with the glasses and the plain wall behind him.
I mean, relying on Jonnu Smith to make some targets is probably going to be a big deal. Devon Achane is going to be catching targets as a wideout, probably. But all that stuff is things we've been knowing about for quite some time now. They have already tried to experiment a little bit with that in the preseason, very briefly. And I guess they're just very confident that Tyreek is going to stay healthy. And I figure that as long as they have Tyreek Hill, then anything else is possible, because Tua and Tyreek are just that special, which maybe they are. And quite frankly, Eric Ezukama more than likely will make it to Miami's practice squad. I don't think there are going to be that many teams who are going to chomp at the bit to get their hands on a guy who may or may not be that healthy. And again, looking around the waiver wires for Miami, for around the league, yeah, there are some people that you could kind of raise an eyebrow and be like, that might be interesting. Like, I know that Donovan Peoples-Jones is now available for somebody to swipe, so maybe Miami could put in a claim for him. I think Alf mentioned briefly that that might be an interesting name for them to consider.
Yeah.
So there are options, but honestly, I think that they are perfectly content, whether that's a good thing or not, to just stick with Tyreek, Waddle, Braxton Berrios, and Malik Washington as the team's main wide receivers at the beginning of the season. And they will use Jonnu Smith. They will use Julian Hill. They will use Devon Achane as potential extra targets if Tua Tagovailoa ends up needing them in the first place. So that's what I think as far as the offense is concerned. But I'll throw it back to you, Duke. What's your thoughts on the wide receiver room at this point?
12 personnel, 21 personnel, 22 personnel. Let's go with that.
But here's the only thing, Duke, is they ran a higher percentage of 11 personnel during the preseason than they ever had before during the preseason. And you know they went into the season wanting to run a ton of 11, where they wouldn't have signed OBJ. I understand that obviously the roster situation and the injuries of OBJ and Craycraft means you're going to have to make some kind of adjustment. But man, that's a pretty big adjustment based off what you were planning all offseason to do from the beginning. I don't know that they're going to go out and get a big name or make a big trade, but they're definitely really going to add back some people and put them on the roster for the beginning of the season.
Yeah, they're going to add somebody. I mean, they're not going to go with just four wide receivers. I think the last time Miami did that was 2015. But I think you're going to get the bulk of your offense from those personnel groupings. I think you're going to see a lot of passes to the backfield. I think you're going to see the tight ends become more involved. And I don't think that the third wide receiver, they structured Odell Beckham's contract in a way to where he would get bonuses if he essentially surpassed his numbers from last season. So if they can, you know, if he does that, that's great. That's helping Miami, of course. But I just don't think they're necessarily going to rely on that third wide receiver as much. You know, before the preseason, that's how I would have gone with it. After watching the preseason, I think they're going to lean heavily on the tight ends a lot. I think Jonnu Smith is going to see heavy usage. I think they're going to use Julian Hill heavily. I think you're going to see Achane line up wide. And we're probably one of the few teams in the league that could go in with 21 or 22 personnel and go five wide and still be dangerous. All right, you got other teams that would do that, and they're not going to be that crazy. So it's going to be interesting to see who they attempt to add to that group and who gets cut to facilitate that. But, you know, unless there's somebody out there that they just absolutely love, I don't think it's going to be anybody that we necessarily like a big name or anything like that. It's going to be a guy that's probably going to have some special teams value and some stuff like that. I don't know about Noah Brown or Peoples Jones, how they fit into that, but it's not somebody that, you know, this is wide receiver five we're talking about. They're not going to come directly into this offense and start immediately. So you're looking at, I think Malik Washington's probably wide receiver three at this point, but it's 3A and 3B with Berrios. So I think that first few weeks, we're going to see the tight ends and running backs get a lot of run in the passing game. And then as Beckham comes off PUP in 4 weeks, they will ramp up his usage into that. And then we're going to start seeing a wider variety. So, but it'll be fun to see who they add. You know, looking at the list, I was trying to keep up with it all day. I don't know who they're going to cut. Maybe Tanner Connor. Is he the last guy off? Jeff Wilson. I mean, who's it going to be? Is it one of those offensive linemen? Who's the other guy that's going to make room for a fifth wide receiver?
You know, I wonder if, first of all, I think if they do make an addition to the room, it would be a Chase Claypool level add. I don't think that they're, as to borrow Chris Greer's phrase, they're not as worried about the wide receiver room as we are right now, because they know that they have.
Is Claypool hurt though, Eric? I wasn't sure. I thought that name too. I wouldn't be surprised by that either if he's not injured.
Well, I just mean like it would be the equivalent of that kind of signing where the guy that doesn't.
I see
really
what you're saying.
Isaiah
Ford. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right. May as well be.
John Metchie III is available up for trade.
I would love that.
Roll Tide, let's go, baby.
My question is. I think we're kind of looking at this, you know, the wrong way a little bit. I think this could be a great thing for the offense in the long term, because we talked about last year where the Dolphins were maybe a little bit too Tyreek centric, and they were kind of forcing him the ball at times. He already plays about half the snaps. You're telling me in the first 3 to 4 weeks of the season, you're going to have Tyreek, Waddle, and Washington and Berrios are going to be your main targets at the wide receiver spot. Tyreek's going to be playing maybe half the snaps. It's going to force this offense to diversify in a way that it hasn't been forced to in the last couple of years. And I know that Mike McDaniel's got a very deep playbook as it is, but, you know, we've heard this talk all the time. How many times have we heard a coach talk about, oh yeah, we're going to shift X running back out wide and he's going to get some work in the slot this year and he's going to make a difference in the passing game. I think that's actually going to be a real part of the offense with Devon Achane this year. I think Jonnu Smith is going to be a real part of this offense. And I think that by the end of the season, you know, when you do potentially have a River Craycraft and an Odell Beckham, you know, I think it could make the offense all the more dangerous for it. Just because they'll have these reps of doing these different things and trying these different, you know, ideas that Mike McDaniel has had all offseason to come up with. So I think by the end of the year, maybe there's a little bit of an adjustment period early, but I think that by the end of the year, them being forced to kind of be resourceful in this way, it could be a great thing for the offense.
Anybody else have some thoughts on that?
Yeah. So we've talked about this before, and right, seems to be our favorite topic, me and Hassam, that in the Dolphins offense, the F position, right? So whether it is your wide receiver three that's on the field, whether it's your tight end two that's on the field, or whether they go with two halfbacks on the field, that extra player is literally the same position in the Dolphins playbook. So when you look at the guys they tried to bring on slower, like a Ezukama, or the way they were trying to bring Achan slower last year, those players were learning their primary positions with a vision for them to be in this F position. So when you look at where Achan is today, I expect that when we see Mostert and Achan on the field, that Achan is going to be in that F position and is going to be utilized as a wide receiver three. Malik Washington, when he's on the field with Hill and Waddle, he will be in that F position. Janu Smith or Tanner Connor, if they are on the field with Durham Smythe or Julian Hill, those guys are going to be in the F position. And that's what makes this offense so difficult to learn for the skill position players, that in addition to learning their base position, whether it's an X or a Z or a Y, those guys are all also learning the F position. And that's, you know, so I don't think it's going to be a huge transition. That, you know, Ron pointed out they were in a ton of 11 personnel. That third wide receiver is your F position, right? So whether it's Janu or Achan, those guys have all already been working on that position and have experience in those alignments. So I don't think it's going to be a huge transition to go from the 11 personnel that we see in the preseason to the other personnel groupings where it's a different type of player playing in that F position.
And here on this video that I just have pulled up as well, Eric and I pretty much get into the basis of the F position here. This is from the Denver game, obviously, when the entire offensive line was healthy and Devon Achain had a monster month. But this position, you know, the F position being the force player itself in a 21 to 22 or even in an 11 and 12 personnel as well, anybody can be the F position player. But, and it's cognizant on what the formation is, what the personnel grouping is as well. And we saw during the preseason, Tanner Connor, Jonnu Smith, River Craycraft, Devon Achane, Raheem Mostert, Eric Ezukama, these guys as F position or force player position players. And I'll go ahead and roll.
To take notice to the ways that they use the F, because it was Mostert that was moving to the F. Because, you know, he's been around, he knows this offense. So they would put Achan in as ZH and use Mostert as the F. So we're in fast 21 personnel with Mostert as the F. And now, so the formation is what is called BY, and that is B-I-Y. And what that is, it's a 3-by-1 formation. So you got three receivers on the top there on the left, one receiver on the bottom. And it's a B formation. And then, so your I in that is the I in the formation means that the F goes to the inside. So that's why Mostert is lined up as the wing on the inside of that 3-by-1 formation. Your Y in the formation means that your Y becomes the point man in that formation. So that is, I believe, Smythe that's in the middle of that 3-by-1. And then we're going to get Fox. So it's B or By, B-I-Y, left Fox, and Fox is going to tell that F, which is Mostert, to motion out.
All right, here we go. We'll run the play right here. Mostert motioning right out.
Yep, and then we get a crack toss to the outside with Teron Armstead leading, and Mostert is a lead blocker as well.
There we go. We're good, right?
Yes.
We're perfect. All right. So anyone have thoughts on that?
I mean, it was just interesting because it set up like it was going to be. I really, watching it, and I watched the game, could not tell for the life of me, is that going to be a pass play or a run play? It just looked very deceiving. I imagine, you know, they could definitely throw out of that exact formation and be very effective as well. So
they can. Yep.
Yeah, that was really interesting. I mean, a lot of times, even though you can throw out of certain formations and run out of certain formations, you still kind of lean one way or the other as people that are fans of football watch it more, you know, not from an X's and O's standpoint, but just watch every play all the time, or like Assam and Eric that get into the X's and O's. And on a lot of the plays I see with Miami, and there's a perfect example, you just simply cannot tell by staring at it, which way are they going with this?
Let me tell you about Prize Picks. Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Prize Picks is the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sport. All you do is pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Get in on the daily action with your friends and become part of the Prize Picks community today. Sign up today and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. One Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right. Only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. 4 weeks of free W's. Don't miss this deal on Prize Picks because it's gone when September ends. Football is on the way, so do as I do and make Monday and Thursday night football more interesting. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the promo code 3YARDS. That's the number 3YARDS and get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's the code 3YARDS on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. Prize Picks, run your game.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
That's one of the designs of McDaniel's offense that I really do like. I mean, every year he comes up with some new and just something exciting. It looks better. I'm just excited to see what this year is going to look like.
And the thing is, Ron, you can run this exact play out in 11 personnel as well with 3 wide receivers. You could have, you know, a guy like Braxton Berrios, who is okay in run blocking. Definitely not Willie Snead. Am I right there, Lewis? Definitely not Willie Snead.
No, definitely not Willie Snead, and thank God that that man's gone.
Ooh, Willie Snead. How dare they?
Yeah, I've reached a point where with the Dolphins, I see all the talent. I see the vision as it is. I don't particularly care for some of the decisions they make, particularly on the offensive line.
Because they're less worried about it than you, Lewis.
Exactly, and the same thing for the wide receiver. It's
so if we are on the topic of offensive line Coach Smith probably has a very long-worded soliloquy about this offensive line group. And look, Lewis and Eric, Chris, and Ron, when was the last time we actually had a decent offensive line group besides 2016? But then you got to remind yourself, okay,
this last is year team, when the season started?
Last year the season, but then it went to complete.
Yeah, but then it went to complete crap. But honestly, that was really when we had TA there, and we had
Ryan Armstead, Connor Williams.
Connor Williams, and we had Isaiah Robert Wynn. Hunt, and we had Isaiah Wynn.
Robert Hunt.
That was whether he had Lamb or Armstead.
Like the weak links
really good,
were
that they played really good. I mean,
the weak
really
links were Wynn and Jackson. Like that in and of itself should tell you that they were managing to make a lot of great moves that we didn't even realize. Like, but again, there has to be some level of known talent available there. Robert Hunt was a high draft pick for Miami. He was a stud of a guard, and that's why he now, whether you think he deserves it or not, Robert Hunt is now making $100 million for the Carolina Panthers because he's that good. If you're not that good, you don't get paid that much. So with that being said, now we have, I'm guessing for right now, anyway, assuming Aaron Brewer is healthy and he comes back for week one, Liam Eichenberg will probably end up being the right guard. Liam Eichenberg has not proven that he can do anything at this point. And regardless of whatever film we can find to find us, he doesn't even have the 14 snaps that Austin Jackson had. Like, I know Ron loves to tease me about the 14 snaps that he had before he ended up getting injured.
Oh, he proved out on those 14 snaps.
Yeah. Right, but that's what I'm saying. But at least those 14 snaps, it was like, oh, there's something there. With Liam Eichenberg, there has been nothing. A backup center. That's what he is. Like, that's the best he's been so far. And it's the only position that we didn't expect him to play.
I think Coach Eric disagrees and can prove it with some film studies as well. Right, Coach?
Yeah, I mean, Liam gets highlighted every time he makes a mistake. And I'm not going to sit
here and
say
which is too much. How many times did it happen, though, Coach? A lot.
Not as often as you would think compared to some of the other players. Mm. Right?
That's still not good.
And I'll use Jack Driscoll as a perfect example here. Right? We talk about, you know, one of the big things I hear about Liam Eichenberg is how much time he spends on the ground. Right. And we can go back through the preseason reviews that I did. Right. And you can easily pull up the Jack Driscoll one where he got annihilated by Vita Vey playing center. But then even this past week's, we're looking at an outside zone where Jack Driscoll is pulled down to the ground as an offensive tackle. Right. So that happens to all of them. It just so happens that, you know, Jesse Davis, who's a free agent now, has moved on, and we got to find somebody new that's the whipping boy for the Dolphins offensive line, and that's Liam Eichenberg. And I, you know, like I said, I'm not going to sit here and try to make a case for him that he's going to be a Pro Bowl player, but the attention on him when he messes up is just a lot more than what it is for anybody else on this offensive line.
It sucks. No, I'm just kidding.
In life and in football, it is very hard to open.
Who wants some Liam Eichenberg all 22 right now?
All right, hit us with it. Hit us with a seven good plays, Sam.
There are going to be a few crack toss plays. And you can see on this one that
Okay, hold on. Do we want run plays or pass plays?
I mean, pass plays are better. You know what? Actually, if we're going to do to his benefit, let's do run plays. Because I personally believe that the Miami Dolphins, if they had to weigh how good can you pass block versus how good you could run block on an offensive line, whether they like you or not, they're going 60-40 run block versus pass block. Pass block, they want you to hold your block for two and a quarter seconds. Run block, you better do exactly what we tell you to do, exactly how you're supposed to do it. So I would bet if we're going to see a bunch of Eichenberg highlights, we're probably going to see more run block than pass block, just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think people get too upset about the pass protection. Like, oh, we got to keep Tua off the ground. The difference between an all-pro guard and a really bad guard over the course of a season is a handful of plays. It doesn't seem that way, but it's a handful of plays. You're not talking about, you know, oh, Liam Eichenberg got beat 50 times compared to two for this guy. No, it's a small handful of plays. And Tua gets the ball out. Like he said this week, he's going to get the ball out quick. That's the staple of the offense. It's the run blocking. And when you go back to highlight that play that you just showed in the Denver game, my understanding of the playbook is that the concepts have the same look and they can run pass or almost run depending on the look that they have, right? So if the defense presents one thing, Tua can check to a pass play there if he needs to. I may be wrong on that. But the run blocking is where it's going to be important because it's that's where they're going to, you know, especially even a lot of their pass concepts are run blocking looks that they pass out of. And so I want to see what Liam Eikenberg looks like in the run game more than the pass game, because even if he gets beat badly on a pass play, Tua can still get out of it. It's the run blocking that's going to be an issue.
Here we're going to get a crack toss to the right.
Liam's right here.
And again, you can see that he does a good job of getting out to that three technique.
He does a what? He does a what in run blocking?
Duke? That would be a good job. And if you go back and just look at this past week, we had examples of other guys. You know, that as easy as that looks, it's not an easy task for a guard to be able to get around a three technique defensive tackle. And I, you know, there's a lot of people that use Eichenberg's athleticism as a negative for him. And I think that that's another kind of misguided thing that, you know, if you really look at, you know, his metrics, he's not an unathletic guard. He's not Aaron Brewer, but you know, those guys aren't out there, but he's probably, you know, just a notch below Jack Driscoll in terms of his athleticism. And, you know, in his breakdown, I think I provide several plays that, you know, go to that end where we see guys like a Lester Cotton, sometimes a Rob Jones, even in this past week's preseason review, looking at Matt Jones and Chasen Hines, that, you know, something as basic as that is not necessarily in everybody's toolbox, and it is for Liam.
So, panel, can anyone tell me where this philosophy, this run and this scheme and this offensive line philosophy comes from? Oh, not you, Coach. Duke. Not you, Coach.
I'll give it to Duke.
Like the West Coast offense? Is that like that what you mean by like as far as concept goes, or
you're
what
close,
part of the country it like, came from? Or I didn't know what you meant exactly.
Yeah, I was gonna say Mike Shanahan kind of didn't he originate the zone blocking kind of looks.
We have it. We have the correct answer in the chat from Jason Stamps.
Yep.
So that was Alex
Who's
Gibbs
Jason
under.
Stamps? No, I'm just kidding.
Under Kyle or Mike Shanahan, you know, going back to the Terrell Davis days, you know, that's where this has evolved from, and it's obviously
Lewis and Eric. I don't think we remember those days.
Not quite.
All right.
I guess that's why Lewis calls me the old Eric.
So
we've got about 15 minutes left. So I want to just briefly touch on, so we've already gone through what we think of the surprises of the cutdowns.
What are we going to do about long snapper? I assume they're adding, is this some
Blake
kind
Ferguson's going to come back.
Yeah, I know, but why are we cutting him to begin with?
We're getting John Denny back, guys. We're getting
John Denny. I'll take it. Let's bring him back.
I think Barry said that was just roster shenanigans.
Yep.
And I believe that's the actual word he used.
Yep. Handshake agreement.
Yeah, just some sort of roster management they're doing, which I don't know. Like, I remember back in the day where you kept the 53 guys you liked the most, and the other guys that you cut and that you didn't like, they were just gone and cut a little early. And then the rest of the guys that you cut were your practice squad guys. You were hoping if they don't get picked up. Now, man, they do the – now NFL's not just Miami. It feels like Miami more than anybody, but now Miami just does the weirdest stuff, man. Like, ever since McDaniel got here, especially, it's just such odd initial cuts in what they do. I mean, I know that they have reasons, right? Like, they have reasons, and those are probably really good reasons, and I'd love to hear them talk through it, like, a year later, if it isn't giving away any of their secrets of what their tendencies are. But, man, it's just very odd. Like, that first initial 53, it's like, why did we cut this? And I don't know. It's just weird. I mean, clearly they're going to be adding a wide receiver. Clearly they're going to be adding probably another quarterback, at least to the practice squad, right? Like, you know, clearly we could see they're going to be adding these these positions. But for a long snapper, I mean, they have to have one. So I don't know why they don't just – why they cut some of the stuff they cut. It's just odd to me.
I think that goes back to the idea of this being a talented roster. And when you have a less talented roster, then you don't have to do these type of gymnastics to keep your talented players. But as your roster gets more talented and you have more players that other teams may want, then you do stuff like this. I think we all agree that Blake Ferguson is going to come back. He's a vested veteran, so he doesn't have to go through the waiver process. So he can't even be claimed by another team. He can go wherever he wants, including back to Miami. And my view on this type of move is that, you know, they can keep a guy, right, whether it's a, you know, Andrew Meyer, whether it's Storm Duck, Patrick McMorris, right? We can keep this guy for another week, right? Blake Ferguson not being here long snapping for a week is not going to change his performance in week one. So we can kind of put him on the back burner, let everybody else go through the whole waiver process and poaching each other's players. And then once all that settles down, then, you know, let's say that Andrew Meyer is the guy that they're doing this for, right? Then they can release Andrew Meyer, sign Blake Ferguson, and it's a lot less likely that Andrew Meyer gets claimed because everybody else already has their 53-man roster set heading into the regular season.
That makes a lot of sense. That's a ton of sense, actually. I mean, if Ferguson is a guy, like you said, that they can just cut and he can just go where he wants, he doesn't have to be claimed, then that makes sense because, in essence, they say, hey, we cut you. You are already guaranteed set amount of money, and guess what? We'll make you a deal. You get to keep that money on that old contract. Now we're going to sign you for the same exact amount, so you just made, like, a signing bonus. You know, they could do something like that as long as they agree about it ahead of time. He's not going to go anywhere. He's just going to sit there and, like, all right, I'll see you tomorrow when you re-sign me. You know what I mean? I get it. It makes sense now that you explain it that way.
Yeah, I mean, cheating the system is that's kind of what the offseason's all about. Like, whose GM is the best at sneaking around the rules and trying to let's put it this way.
Who's
the worst at it? Steven Ross.
Chris Greer is the Bill Belichick of GMs. He manages to find ways to just barely just toe the line of what's legal and what's not. And technically speaking, there's nothing wrong with this.
What do you know about legality in the NFL, Lewis? How do you know?
I can tell you that deflating footballs is against the rules, and you're not supposed to do that. And somehow you can still get away with it anyway. I do know that. I also know that you can semi get away with spying on people, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff. But anyway, there is one last thing that I wanted to briefly touch on. And I guess this is one name that we haven't mentioned because I guess for a lot of people, I guess this was kind of expected. Mike White ended up getting, he was one of the first cuts that Miami made altogether. And I feel like this needs to be addressed because there are probably some people who didn't notice. I didn't realize that this had happened up until somebody had pointed it out. So apparently the rules, according to the NFL, have changed based on the NFL Players Association. There is no longer going to be an unlimited call-up for emergency third quarterbacks. So basically the reason for that is that way you can't just constantly just call up Skylar Thompson and get him on a really small, tiny practice squad deal.
Which is what they thought they would be doing. And apparently the league did not communicate this to the teams in a correct amount of time. So teams were going through thinking, oh, it's going to be this way. And then all of a sudden, last minute, they're like, oh, just kidding. Can't do that. Sorry, we forgot to tell you. I mean, that's pretty much how it went down. So I almost wonder, would they have cut White? You know, anyway, if they had known that. I don't know when they found out compared to when they cut White. I'm not really sure, honestly. But I just kind of question that. But let's pretend like they did already know. I feel like they cut White early as an indication that, look, man, we're cutting you, and we want you a chance. We want everybody to see ahead of time why they think about it. We want you to have a shot to get on another team. We're going to cut you early so teams can start making plans if they're interested in you, and they're looking for another third quarterback. That's my opinion, but I don't know how anybody else sees it.
Patrick Turiano in the chat talking about how they might be doing the roster maneuvering because they want to put someone else on IR return, see Anthony Walker. But the NFL limits teams to only two of these slots during cutdowns. So I guess the understanding that I have is that it's not only two players for the entire year, because that would be a major limitation, because they had like four or five, it felt like, last season. So I guess the two is only for the initial 53-man roster cutdown, I think is what they're referring to there. Yeah. So there will be more available as the season progresses.
Yeah, what Patrick T. Toronto.
You get eight total for the year, and only two today can count. So you have Cam Smith, River Craycraft.
Well, Craycraft isn't one of the ones that they put on there right now.
Yeah, they didn't put him on anything, right? PUP or IR. Did I have that correct?
Well, you know what? He's also not on the roster. Did you notice that?
He's got to be on one of the designations.
He's on IR.
Okay.
He's on IR, and Chris Brooks, if he clears waivers, will revert to IR. I don't foresee them bringing him as one of those back, but you got three guys right now that are more than likely going to go on IR. Two of them can come back, so.
I believe if Chris Brooks clears waivers, his season is over officially.
Yeah.
Benton B back in the chat earlier on in the show, he actually mentioned per CK, our good old guy on 3 yards per carry. By the way, only $3 a month to get onto OnlyFins, best Discord server for any Miami Dolphins fan. Discord.gg/OnlyFins. Per Chris Kaufman, if Chris Brooks is not claimed off of waivers, he will automatically revert to Miami's season ending injured reserve. He could work out an injury settlement. So, again, I like Chris Brooks a lot. If Miami could find a way to keep him around, I would love to. I really do believe, though, that it's...
That's six running backs on the roster, dude.
I mean, you know what? Devon Achane is basically a wide... He is an OW. He is what they were trying to... I'm trying to remember the guy's name. You remember he was on the Jacksonville Jaguars. What was that guy's name? They were trying to make a brand new position just for him, and they were trying to get away with it, and the NFL...
You talking about Shoelace?
Denard Robinson?
Yeah.
Denard Robinson. That was him. Yeah.
Shoelace.
They were trying so hard to make this thing stick. He was an OW. He wasn't a running back. He wasn't a wide receiver. He wasn't a quarterback. He was just an offensive weapon.
So like, kind of like Lynn Bowden Jr.?
Yeah, basically like Lynn Bowden Jr. Listen, I will swear up and down that if I had to choose between Lynn Bowden Jr. and Malcolm Perry when he was on the team, I still would have picked Malcolm Perry more. I think that Malcolm Perry was given a bad rap, and unfortunately, there was so much wildcat shenanigan potential there, and I think it was better than what Lynn Bowden Jr. had. At least Malcolm Perry played a lot of quarterback. I don't remember how much Lynn Bowden did. So,
Kentucky is last year.
Yeah, I mean. But Malcolm Perry was spent a lot of time, he spent a couple of seasons.
Now,
really playing quarterback, though.
But he's a wildcat thing. I'm not saying he's the backup quarterback.
Listen, I can kill two birds with one stone here. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but did you know Ryan Tannehill played wide receiver?
Oh, Lord have mercy.
That's interesting. I had no
Fascinating.
Idea.
I never would have guessed.
I mean, it's not common knowledge. But there's your third. There's your third quarterback and fifth wide receiver.
Forget signing Ryan Tannehill as QB2. Let's sign him as wide receiver 5.
There we go.
Exactly. You think he can still do it? Problem can he still solved. Run?
Well, use him like Taysom Hill.
Exactly.
Yeah,
don't give Mike McDaniel any ideas, dude.
I mean, hey, I'm sure Tebow would be willing to come back to the NFL. Going to do all this crap.
Yeah. Listen, the man is in his ministry. He's not coming back. He's done. He is.
Oh, are you kidding me? Oh, come on. Yeah, a team calls. I don't want to get into a Tebow conversation. A team calls. He's running back to the NFL.
No, running back. I think he's come to terms with his life as it is right now. So. Anyway, we're getting close to the end here. I want to give everybody a chance to give some final thoughts before we call it a show here. So, Duke, I'll start with you. Anything that you would like that we didn't get to touch on that you just kind of have thoughts on before we call it a show?
The one interesting name, and I've got them all listed them out here. The one interesting name for me is the center, Meyer. I was very intrigued by him when they signed him. Look at some of his pre-draft metrics. I'd like to see a guy like that stick. And I believe it was Alf today tweeted that if they keep him around, That means that's less position shuffling that you will see on the offensive line. So no more Liam Eichenberg at right guard. Oh, now he's got to come play center. You have a guy for that, and he can just stay where he's at. So I'll be interested to see what Coach Smith says on Meyer, his opinion on him. But that was the intriguing name to me. Most of the other guys, I kind of, you know, there was a few surprises like Ezukama getting cut and things like that. But for the most part, it was kind of, you know, kind of what I expected. I was not expecting him to make a roster. So that was a positive development.
All right. And let's go down the horn here. Eric W., let's hear from you, sir.
Yeah, so, I mean, ultimately, I think a lot is going to get made of this initial 53 because of some of the things that stand out, like having just four wide receivers. I think the average fan that, you know, scrolls Twitter is going to see that and say, oh, my God, what are they doing? I'm not worried about it. I think Craig Kraft and Odell probably are guys that get off the IR / PUP as quickly as they are eligible to. You know, I'm happy that they've prioritized adding some younger players to the secondary, like a Storm Duck and a Patrick McMorris. I think they need that youth, in that secondary. It is an older secondary. And then, I mean, I'm just going kind of rapid fire in all directions right now. Chris Brooks, I hope he sticks. I hope he clears those waivers and stays and decides he wants to just stay on that season ending IR. Because I think that there's a real role for him in the offense next year, once Mostert and potentially Jeff Wilson Jr. end up moving on. And I'm sneaky excited for this tight end room because I think John is going to be used as a weapon. But I am here to tell you, Julian Hill has made me a believer. I think he's going to be Miami's best inline tight end this season.
All right. Hussam, final thoughts, sir?
This just goes back to the offensive philosophy of the offensive line with Mike McDaniel, Kyle Shanahan, Mike Shanahan, Gary Kubiak, and Alex Gibbs. I mean, this offensive line is going to work together basically, you know, as a unit. Like, they are going to be taught how to play well together as a system that everyone believes in. Hashtag and Butch Berry, we trust. Like most of these offensive linemen, they're athletic, quick, agile. Liam Eichenberg is all three of those as well. He fits the bill. They're all good enough to get over to the second and third level and understand the angles to make it work. It's more so about making sure the offensive line is above the line of demarcation to make sure they're surviving as well. I mean, this Dolphins offense the last 2 years has been at the top of the offensive production with meager offensive line play. But, you know, the questions still linger on the road in cold weather against, you know, physical defenses. Ultimately, they're running it back, just like how the Miami Heat the last couple seasons are running it back as well. They're staunch with their organizational philosophy. They're not going to deviate. Their belief is in core star skill players to get the job done. And if the offensive line can hold up for their part and the ball is able to be given to their star players where they're able to make plays in the cold weather against physical defenses on the road, and they win half of those games and make the playoffs and potentially win a playoff game, that is a success.
Coach Eric.
Yeah, so of course I got to talk about offensive line here.
You can talk about kicker if you want.
No. So I felt like the top nine were pretty solid locks. I mean, you got your five stars in Armstead, Jones, Brewer, Eichenberg, Jackson, Patrick Paul, obviously a lock. Kendall Lamb is your best right tackle option because they're not asking Paul to do both, so he's safe. You have Jack Driscoll, who is a five-position versatile guy. He was safe. And then Lester Cotton, when Aaron Brewer got injured, he was the one they inserted from the beginning. If you go back and watch the training camp videos, Lester Cotton went to right guard right away. So I felt like he was safe as well. Obviously, the surprise there is Andrew Meyer, and I feel that him being on the 53 means one of two things. Number one would be that Aaron Brewer is at risk of missing 1 or 2 weeks of the regular season, and that they're keeping Meyer on the roster so that with Eichenberg starting, that Driscoll is not the only backup that has center experience. Or the second scenario that they kept Meyer, in my opinion, would be that he is the Blake Ferguson player, that they like him enough. And I do like him. I feel like he's got potential to be the center of the future a couple years from now. I'm not talking this year or next year, but building up his strength for a couple of years, he could be the guy that replaces Aaron Brewer on a cheap contract and continues the building of the offensive line. But I think that he's going to be a player that at some point this season ends up getting cut, ends up getting brought back on the practice squad. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen pretty soon as the corresponding move with bringing Blake Ferguson back.
All right. And lastly, Ron.
I'll start where Eric W. left off. I'm really, really interested as a whole in this tight end room. Obviously, they've added Jonnu Smith, who clearly we know is going to be involved in the pass game, and I think he's going to be involved in the run game, too, in more ways than one. So Julian Hill is just really coming to his own all of a sudden, and Durham Smythe, I mean, we know what he can do. He's solid. He can go out and catch some passes, but, you know, he's going to be a pretty solid blocker most of the time, too. I just really interested in that room to see what happens. I'm excited about Malik Washington as a kick returner and as a punt returner. I think we might have something with that dude there. Like, I just think there is something there with that guy. So, I mean, that was more an observation from preseason and less one about the roster itself. But I'm really interested in that. And then lastly, I'll say just this linebacker room, man, it's looking crazy. I mean, there's just so many names. You just got to figure. And I heard you mention Lewis when you said it. You said Duke Riley, like you were surprised. I'm not surprised at all. I consider Duke Riley a lock. They like him. They've seen him step up and play pretty good when he was thrown into the fire. And yes, he's not perfect. And yes, sometimes he makes mistakes. But I mean, I think they trust him for his role and what they ask him to do. So I'm just interested there because we brought in so many people to replace what we lost and try and help with Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb and all that. And just like a lot of people stepped up and showed they could play in both the DL and linebacker group. And it made it tough for them. It made it real tough. I don't know that they're done having to make cuts there yet. So I'm kind of concerned to see who might get the axe or go to IR, like somebody mentioned about Anthony Walker. So that's really all the observations I have.
Well, my final thoughts on this before we call it a show is that, like we mentioned, this initial 53-man roster, there's still going to be some shuffling here and there. But we have to keep in mind that there are players waiting in the wings for their shot. And when those guys show up, Miami still has some tough decisions to make. Because when someone like a Cam Smith comes back off of IR, what does that mean for Storm Duck? Does he get to stay? Does he have to go now? Is it his time? What happens when if they do add another wide receiver, Odell Beckham's not going to be gone forever. He'll show up. And then what's going to happen? Does that guy leave? What about River Craycraft? He's going to be back. And what happens when that guy's gone? So there are still so many potential opportunities for Miami to just completely rework the roster in ways that we haven't even conceived of yet. Tanner Connor making the team, for instance, that's probably not a permanent thing. Even if he doesn't end up getting waived and replaced with somebody else on the wire, the likelihood of him sticking around for the whole season is very slim.
I think they like him because
I know they like him. I'm sure they do.
They like him because yes, he struggles to block and he struggles to get to his block when he's asked to do so. He really struggles. Like he's got to get a helmet on that guy over there. He struggles to get to that guy down the field a little bit. Like, here's your target. You need to be blocking this guy. Like, he's just not good at it. But this isn't like he's our starting tight end. Like, it's a Mike Gesicki situation where starting tight end can't block crap. He's the fourth guy. They think they can still help teach him how to block, and I think they like his ability as a fourth tight end as a pass catcher, because how many teams have a fourth tight end, a fourth guy who can – how many teams have four tight ends and all of them you feel like can go out there and catch some passes? Like, legitimately, not very many teams. Most teams might have two, three guys max, and a fourth is just nothing but a tight end who blocks. Like
Baltimore Ravens.
Small offensive lineman kind of is what they are. So Baltimore, I think Miami kind of – yeah, okay, the Ravens. I mean, it's just not many teams,
though. The 49ers.
Yeah, so it's the Texans. Like – it's an advantage to have four tight ends.
Okay, he's not going to let you get away with it.
Sam that can go out and do that. So I'm just – be curious to see. I'll also be curious who saw him to see how many of these teams you just mentioned and what their tight end receptions are. I'll be watching there, sir. I'll be watching.
All right. So, everybody, I want to thank you all so much for joining us. Thank you to Hussam and Coach Eric for providing some of their scouting combine clips for us on this show. For those of you who want to see more of a film review, you can go ahead and check out the scouting combine. I believe it is on Wednesdays and Thursdays, question mark, or Tuesday, or was it Wednesday? No, I'm sorry.
It's all the days.
It's all the days, right? It's all the days. This is YouTube. You can come back and watch it anytime you feel like it. So absolutely, you can watch it every day if you want. That's only up to you. There's a whole archive, I'm sure, just like the whole archive of this show right here. So anyway, we're calling it here. This show will be on the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast feed after all is said and done. So if you missed it live here, you can go ahead and listen to it on where you get your podcasts. Thank you once again to jerseys305.com for sponsoring this show. You can use the promo code 5 and you get 10% off your order when you do so. For myself, Ron Caniff, Chris Early, otherwise known as Duke, Eric Whitecke, Eric Smith, Hussam Patel, we are going to say thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you all next week for another episode of Pulse of Fins Nation.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.